from WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's Friday, January 6th, the first show of 2017. Happy New Year, everyone. On this episode of Redux, we're going to explain what the passage of Amendment 2, the medical marijuana bill, means for Floridians. We're also going to look at exploding electronic cigarettes. We'll give you our predictions for the upcoming year. And if financial fitness was one of your New Year's resolutions, you're in luck. Stay tuned. As we usher in the new year, that means it's time for reflection and, of course, resolution. Sure, studies show that only roughly 8% of people actually achieve their New Year's resolutions, but that doesn't stop us from making them, especially when it comes to matters of personal finance. In fact, nearly 40% of people have a financial resolution for the new year, and more than 50% of them say that their focus is on saving more, spending less. Easier said than done, right? Well, maybe. Cheryl Barnett is a senior vice president with First Tennessee Bank, and she shared some tips with Melissa Ross earlier this week on First Coast Connect.
Step one would be to calculate your net worth statement, and that's a big term, but basically, and you can do this with a legal pad and a pen, just sit down and write down all of your assets, all your savings and your retirement funds, any stocks or investments that you might own, plus write down all of the debts that you have. If you have several credit card accounts, if you have student loans, write down the debts that you have, what the balances are, and what interest rates you're paying on that debt. That gives you a good foundation for where you are.
And now that you figured out what you owe and what you have, Barnett recommends incremental changes as the key for success.
Start small, sustainable, realistic. Work toward maybe $1,000 in savings. Most people who have an emergency, it's going to be something like a flat tire, or it's going to be a doctor visit that they need the copay for. So work toward putting aside $1,000 in savings. And then as you have that comfort level there, you can grow your savings. A really good rule of thumb is at least 3 months of income required to pay your bills. So once you've got your net worth statement and you see your budget, you know how much you need every month to pay your bills and have your discretionary funds to spend, then try to work toward putting that much aside and have 3 months of safety net savings.
To hear the entire interview, visit wjctnews.org. First Coast Connect can be heard each weekday morning at 9 a.m. with host Melissa Ross. You can hear it on 89.9 FM or streaming on our WJCT app. As we continue ushering in the new year, WJCT business analyst John Burr is predicting big things for Jacksonville. Among them, the first sighting of a boom economy in a decade, high consumer confidence, more home construction, and gas prices staying relatively low. He breaks down even more predictions for news director Jessica Palumbo in this week's Business Brief.
John, let's start with some good news.
It's all good this year. St. Augustine is going to continue to boom as a tourism mecca for Northeast Florida. I don't know if you've been down there lately, but the place is packed. It's packed every weekend. Closer to home, Rebirth of Murray Hill neighborhood will pick up steam this year.
Okay, so for people looking to buy a house in Murray Hill, time to buy?
Do it. It's going to become a great destination, and already is, but even more so a destination for people looking for good food and entertainment.
Okay, John, let's talk downtown. First of all, we have to talk about the Shipyards project.
We have to, and I think that's going to be the real linchpin for downtown this year. I'm predicting the city and Shad Khan will agree to a massive redevelopment of Metro Park and the Shipyards property. And I really think this is going to be transformative in the scale and the scope. And in coming years, we'll probably spark the rest of the rebirth of downtown Jacksonville that we've been waiting years for. There are other smaller but still significant projects downtown, including Bold City Brewery opening up, Calford Chop House in the summertime, both of those on Bay Street, and it's both of those are really going to move things positively. Fast on the heels of the Shipyards development, you're going to have an announcement to tear down that so-called Beirut Berkman on Bay Street.
The skeleton building that is in the Jacksonville skyline, and people go, huh, what's that?
But it's going to be torn down, and there's going to be a new luxury condo, high-rise type thing built there. And let's not forget the district. Across the river, it's a collection of shops, apartments. It's going to be coming out of the ground on the south bank next to the Duval County School Board building. And you can look for Peter Rummel, who's running that show, to buy the school board building and fold the property into the district. Let's go over to Riverside for a second. The Times Union property is going to be sold to a master developer, going to build luxury condos and shops there.
You're very optimistic here about downtown development in the coming year. Anything that you're not so hot on?
Yeah, some of those old projects have been hanging around for years. I don't think it's really going to happen this year either. The renovation of the historic Laura Street Trio, the original Barnett Tower, the old vacant waterfront Duval County Courthouse, and of course, the Jacksonville Landing. I don't think anything's going to happen with those.
Okay, John, finally, I want to hear your prediction that is on nobody else's list. What's your long shot?
President Trump is pushing for infrastructure funding. It's going to provide a pool of money for port improvements around the country. My prediction is that's going to breathe new life into plans to dredge the St. John's River for Jacksport. That project still got a big legal challenge from the St. John's Riverkeeper, but the question of who's going to pay for it is going to be solved by a combination of a tsunami of infrastructure spending from the feds and more help from the state of Florida.
That's WJCT business analyst John Burr with his crystal ball for 2017. I'm WJCT News Director Jessica Palumbo.
A Central Florida marijuana dispensary made its first delivery to a Jacksonville patient the same day a constitutional amendment went into effect, making medical cannabis more widely available in Florida. As WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, Knox Medical is one of a handful of Florida dispensaries that were allowed to open under a 2014 law.
Navy veteran Gabriel George is using his one good hand in mouth to rip open the plastic packaging of his recently delivered medical marijuana treatment.
They checked my ID, made sure it was me and all that. No,
inside is a small bottle of tincture liquid that's administered using a couple of drops under the tongue. A 30-year-old medically retired from the Navy in 2009 after a bad motorcycle accident left him partially paralyzed. His right arm hangs loosely at his side.
Broke my C2, C5, 6 ribs, my collarbone, scapula, both lungs collapsed, and ripped the nerves on the spinal cord, which paralyzed my right arm. I have an 8-year-old daughter that's my motivator and keeps me alive and going, and I'm here.
George's neurologist suggested non-euphoric marijuana could help with the side effects of his cocktail of pharmaceutical medicines. He turned to anesthesiologist Terrell Newton, one of Florida's roughly 200 licensed marijuana prescribers.
Knox is one of the recently certified and licensed dispensaries, of which there's going to be a total of 6 for Florida. This is their first delivery into the Jacksonville area.
The state awarded Knox the license for Central Florida, and it was finally given the go-ahead to sell its product after an extended court battle. Growers challenged the state as it made rules governing who can grow and sell non-smoked, non-high-inducing marijuana starting in 2014. That law is now expanding after more than 70% of voters last year approved Constitutional Amendment 2, which increases the number of conditions approved for marijuana treatment in Florida. The amendment also legalizes regular strains of the product. But state lawmakers still have 6 months to come up with a new regulatory framework and 9 months to fully implement the expansion. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Now I'm joined in studio with Ryan Bank. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
So there appears to be some confusion about what was passed recently and what was passed in 2014. Ryan, please clear this up for us, will you?
So first of all, we just had Amendment 2 that was passed by 71% of voters in November, which basically expands the current medical marijuana law to include more conditions that can be prescribed this medicine and more types of marijuana. Now, this is actually where the confusion comes in, is people sometimes assume that because the amendment passed, that automatically, you know, the marijuana that somebody may smoke illegally is now all of a sudden legal if they have a certain condition. There's a huge process here. First of all, the actual amendment, it is for very severe conditions. You have to get the approval of a doctor who refers you to another doctor licensed to prescribe the medicine. And it has to be on a small list of conditions like AIDS and HIV or cancer. Now, in terms of what we're looking at for a time frame when the more potent version of marijuana will be available, the amendment has specifically stated that the legislature is required to come up with a new regulatory framework and implementing bill, as it's called, within the first 6 months since its passage. And after that, they have 9 months to fully implement the bill. So it could be a very long while. We also still have some confusion over the old law that was passed in 2014. There was a lot of infighting over how the licenses were chosen at the state level. There was a creation of a Department of Health subsidiary, the Office of Compassionate Use, that went through a rulemaking process to come up with exactly who would be allowed to grow and sell the product. And there's still a lot of controversy lingering over that. So it is possible that we will see at least a year and 3 months, if not longer, before we actually see this product available to patients.
So there you have it. Thank you very much, Ryan.
Anytime.
And finally, among the three most popular New Year's resolutions for 2017, weight loss, more exercise, and quitting smoking. And one popular device for smoking cessation, electronic cigarettes. But as the use of these gadgets go up, so do concerns about their safety. As WJCT's Sid Hoskinson reports, the batteries in these devices have been known to blow up, resulting in broken bones, serious burns, and lawsuits.
Orlando lawyer Mike Morgan has filed a number of lawsuits, including two on behalf of Florida residents who say their electronic cigarettes either caught fire or exploded.
Well, all of our lawsuits involve people that have been severely injured, have suffered third-degree burns, have had the vertebrae blown out the back of their neck.
E-cigs or vaporizers use small but powerful lithium-ion batteries to vaporize liquid nicotine mixtures so they can be inhaled.
Basically, the way that these things end up exploding is either the battery's faulty or there's not enough ventilation within the e-cigarette.
And because most e-cigs are just metal tubes, Morgan says,
when the heat builds up inside those tubes, they act as pipe bombs. And they literally just explode out.
Morgan's clients are seeking money for medical bills and pain and suffering. And it's not just manufacturers that are in his legal crosshairs.
We have sued the individual e-cigarette stores for failure to provide warnings and educating their consumers on these.
It's not bad.
At Always Vapor Vape Shop in the Arlington area of Jacksonville, Chris Watford says he does talk to customers about safety.
If you're messing with these batteries, they need to be in a plastic case. That's the first thing I tell them.
And because he's also an e-cig user, Watford says he's done his homework.
They are dangerous batteries, so you need to keep care of them. Never put them loose in your pockets, never put them loose in your car, and never keep them in your car on a hot day.
The Food and Drug Administration recently assumed oversight of e-liquids to make sure they're safe to use. But websites like eCigaretteReview.com are currently the best, if not the only, source of consumer information about the dangers of lithium-ion batteries, since safety warning labels aren't required on packaging. Still, Always Vapor customers Daniel and Sandy Holloway aren't terribly worried. Now in their 60s, they say they turn to e-cigs to help them kick their longtime smoking habit. For them, the risk is worth it.
Well, he has the beginnings of COPD, and I have a heart condition, so.
And you're stepping down your nicotine?
Mm-hmm. We started like at 18, and we're working our way down.
And possibly be able to quit eventually.
In line with the national trend, the percent of Duval County teenagers who use e-cigarettes has tripled since 2012. Sid Hoskinson, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. Playing us out will be Jacksonville Bluegrass Band, Grandpa's Cough Medicine, who were in studio earlier this week performing on First Coast Connect. You can watch their performances on our Facebook page or on our YouTube page, and that's WJCT Jax. Enjoy. And that concludes Redux from WJCT in Jacksonville. I'm Vince Kong. Thank you for listening.